I'm going down to Delmarva, take a right-hand road. I'm going down to Delmarva, take a right-hand road. Lord, I ain't gonna stop walking till I the girl I'm loving, she got that red long curly hair. Lord, the girl I'm loving, got the red long
And good afternoon. You're back with the Monday Afternoon Show on 90.7 FM WGXC. And it looks like the storm has blown through, and we're joined in the studio right now. My name's Noah Reibel, and I'm here with co-host Melinda Bratton. And we're joined by Lynn Sloniker. And Peter Payden is the executive director of the Columbia Land Conservancy. Peter, thank you so much for coming in the storm, in the weather.
It was a pleasure to be here. It was an exciting trip.
Yeah. So we thought we'd have Peter on the show to talk a little bit about the master plan for a Hudson North Bay recreation and natural area. The North Bay has been in the news a little bit recently because of the Fugari Boat Club, or the North Bay Tin Boat Club, which had shacks that were situated in the North Bay on city-owned property, and the city moved to evict them. Part of the concept of what will happen in the future in the North Bay is, well, maybe I should turn to you, Peter, and ask you, what are some of the ideas that the city is working on with the Columbia Land Conservancy about what will happen in the North Bay in the future, hopefully?
Well, let me just back up a minute and try to get into that question. The North Bay has been recognized for quite a while by people in the city as a potential resource for recreation and conservation. It is a tidal freshwater tidal estuary, which makes it kind of a rare place. It's an important place ecologically. It has obviously kind of interesting history. Not untypically, it was the site of the city landfill for many years. Now it's a remediated landfill. And it's an area where, you know, not too many people really have gone, or really, I think many people in my experience don't even know that it's there. It's the other way when you're turning to the train station, so a lot of people don't tend to go down there. And there's been a real industrial use, which is not uncommon also. It's where the city's wastewater treatment plant is, several other businesses that have engaged in trucking and the like. So it's been a bit of an out-of-the-way spot, but for some time, long before I had this job, there was some talk in Hudson about the long-term plan and in connection with the LWRP process, which was going on for many years. Conceptually, people thought, you know, it would be nice to turn that into some sort of place for public access and access to the natural world. We got asked, the Columbia Land Conservancy, by the city, I think in the early 2000s, again, it was before I had this job, to get involved in helping plan that kind of thing. And there was some initial effort on the part of an organization that was related to the city, I've forgotten the name of it, to make a plan. For a variety of reasons, often things like this don't necessarily progress so much, and this one didn't. And then about 2007, we were approached again by the Hudson River Foundation, which is a foundation focusing on the health and future of the Hudson River. They had a certain amount of money that they got from the settlement of the Athens generating plant litigation a while back, and they wanted to devote it to a study of this idea. They thought the notion of using this area for a recreation area and a conservation area was really important, and they thought that we would be able to be helpful in getting it done because we've done things like that before. So we were very happy to get involved With the consent of the city and the county, that really are the key players here, they own between them, they or entities they control own most of this site. So this was it's a little bit unusual because we got a grant. It was a $150,000 grant. We hired a consulting firm to work with us. And we realized that this really was a conceptual plan. We do not own the property. We can't control the future of it. But we thought that if we did a somewhat detailed concept plan and really looked at the area carefully and thought about what's there, what kind of conservation value does it exist there, what would the potential for access and enjoyment by people, and how do you deal with some of the knotty questions relating to the fact that it's a former landfill, it's kind of an industrial area, and so forth and so on, that it could hopefully be an inspirational thing, and it would inspire the city and the county and the community to say, you know, this is really a great idea, let's do it. So we got this grant, and we have worked for several years with the consulting firm that, and it ultimately published this study, I guess it was just last summer. I've lost track of time a little bit. The vision is that this is both an exceptional area from the point of view of its conservation value. It is, as I say, a freshwater tidal wetland, has very important functions in terms of regeneration of the water, spawning grounds for species, for fish and other aquatic animals. The Hudson River is a very important migratory bird flyway, and the potential for having 80 or so acres of grassland bird habitat here is a rare thing and an important thing as an ecological resource. It's also extremely beautiful, and if you've been down there just to walk up on the capped landfill, which people do, it has really some of the most spectacular views in the city. From our point of view, another really cool thing about it is that it is adjacent to the Greenport Conservation Area. One of the things that the Land Conservancy has been doing now for a number of years is loosely speaking, we essentially manage a county park system. The county really doesn't have places, public parks, for people to go and enjoy the natural world. A long time ago, we decided that that would be an important thing for us to do. No one's going to care much about the natural world if they can't get out into it. And we actually manage at this point 2,000 acres of land and 10 properties throughout the county. We have a crew of guys that takes care of it. We manage them for hiking, for birding, for snowshoeing. They're very beautiful. They're quite diverse. And Greenport was our first and is our largest. It's 700 acres right on the river. It's open fields. It's beautiful forests. It's a big wetland. The only way you can get there right now is by car from Jocelyn Boulevard. And one of the really wonderful things about this property is that it opens up the possibility of pedestrian access from the city. So people who live in the city can ride their bikes or walk down to the North Bay and hike right up into Greenport and have basically a 700-acre park to enjoy. We're really big on trying to find ways to encourage people to use these sites and have access to them. So if we can locate one that's close to where people live, one of our really neat sites is right in the middle of Philmont. You can walk there from Philmont. We think that's a great thing. So this site, from our point of view, is really kind of a grand slam home run because it's a great, great conservation project in terms of the ecological value of conserving it and making it available. And it's a great, great project for allowing people, particularly people who live in a city environment, to connect with the natural world and to get out of the city and experience a really beautiful area.
So when you guys get a grant to study an area like this, I'm guessing you guys do a wildlife inventory and then also look at some of the remediation issues as far as pollution in this case, there seems to have been a lot of industry and also the landfill up there. Mm-hmm. So are those some of the things that you guys studied when you get a grant like this?
Yeah, we hired a consulting firm that has expertise in sort of assessing ecological natural habitats. They have a whole staff of scientists and, you know, aquatic biologists and that kind of thing. We have the person on our staff who really did the major work of this on this piece was not myself. It's a person named Ellen Jerry Epstein, who is a planner, is a professional. She's a landscape architect by training, but she's worked in planning for many years. And so she has worked on any number of studies like this. She's worked with lots of different consulting firms. So she was very capable of kind of managing this project And actually, it was with some input from me, who drafted the study in the end. But the appendix, which I showed you, and which is available in a disc in the back of the back of the hardbound copy, is a very substantial, you know, couple of hundred pages of data, reports, and so forth, doing an inventory of the wildlife that's found there, doing an assessment of the natural plant life that's growing there, the health of the waters in the bay, and so forth. And then we also had to look at information about the landfill. You know, it's not a new idea, but it's a challenging idea to take a site which is an inactive hazardous waste site and talk about how you're going to create public access to it. There are very natural concerns that come to mind about, you know, human access. Is this safe? Is it appropriate for people to be there? So we had to get information from the engineering firm that's been doing all of that, understand the history of the remediation, the status of the landfill, and then talk about how would you kind of balance the need to continue the remediation and the limitations of the site and still make it useful. I mean, there are questions, can you build something on the site? There was some talk at one point about turning this into a public amphitheater, and we could have like big public concerts there. And it's not really realistic. You can't. This is 2 feet of clay on top of a big mound of garbage, and while the garbage is settling and composting and ultimately turning into something, it's not a stable base to construct, you know, an engineering point of view. So that was the kind of thing we had to think about.
And I noticed your report mentioned that there's a 30-year lifespan of regular inspections by the Columbia County Department of Public Works and the Department of Environmental Conservation from the time that the landfill was capped, which was about 15 years ago.
Yeah,
right?
We're about halfway through. When you go down there, you see the, you know, the little white candy canes, the methane vents. It's a very, very common technology. And these landfills generate methane gas. Sometimes, if they're big enough, they generate enough gas to actually generate power. And there are people who've hooked up power generating systems from the methane. That has been looked at here, and there is not enough methane to do that. It also diminishes sort of my terminology isn't quite kind of in, you know, geometric kind of in a great deal more of the gas is vented in the early years than in the later years. So it's monitored on a regular basis. Readings are taken. The 30-year business is a regulatory rule of thumb. If in the judgment of the DEC, there still are readings of methane emissions that are above whatever the level is that they've defined as being their goal, they'll leave the vents in there for a while. But 30 years is probably a pretty good guess, and probably long before 30 years is up, some of the vents can be removed. So it's a process that gets monitored over time.
So, you know, the history of the North Bay is really fascinating because it does have this industrial history and the tracks going through it. And then there's a period, sort of a transitional period that it's been in for decades, I think, now, where a lot of the industry has either slowly disappeared from the river and the city has thought about changing its plans and the uses. And just to make sure that I play the role of being a good surrogate for the guys who are already down there. So the people who are down there, the Fergari Boat Club, says, well, we are already returning this area back to its original use idea, which is that we're hunters and fishermen and sportsmen, and we wanted to be able to have access to the river for that purpose. Do you know, in the future, is there still going to be boating access from the North Bay? Are people still going to be able to access the river to fish or hunt? Is any of that written into your study? Is there a hope that there will still be access for boaters?
Yes, there is that hope. We, you know, as I think I mentioned earlier, this is a very conceptual plan. Even assuming that the community gets behind this, wants to do it, decisions are made, grant funds are found, I am sure that whatever ultimately ensues is not going to look exactly like what we've doped out here. This is a concept, and as it gets implemented, as further planning studies get done, it's going to have to be tweaked in various ways. So this is a vision that hopefully will inspire people to want to do something. And there's not too many real specific particulars here in terms of where X or Y is going to go that I think aren't subject to future discussion. We did say our CLC saying something, we thought that ultimately access by small boats would be a nice thing. This is a beautiful bay. It's nice to get into a bay and paddle around and see what's there. That's a very enjoyable thing. So, you know, in our concept, in our vision, that would be a nice component of the project. The project could go forward, or you could create a conservation and recreation area and not have small boat access, and, you know, it wouldn't necessarily fundamentally change the project. You can get into the river on the main part of the river at the Hudson waterfront and paddle up underneath the trestle and get in here. But we thought that would be a nice thing. So it's going to be for somebody else when they get right down to doing an actual plan to decide if that works.
I wonder, do the rules and sort of the responsibilities of the Columbia Land Conservancy change? Does it make a difference as to whether the Columbia Land Conservancy owns the land outright as opposed to an area like this, which has sort of a patchwork of ownership? Most of it is city-owned, as you said. There does sound like a small piece is privately owned. In this case, it's a little bit different than other projects that the CLC has been involved with, although correct me if I'm wrong, where you guys have essentially purchased the rights to the land, or at least development rights to the land. Is that correct?
Well, yes, it's a very different situation. The public conservation areas that we own or manage are either owned by us outright, or in a couple of cases, they're owned by another organization, and we have a management agreement, and we manage them. We've rarely actually had the wherewithal to go out and just buy property, but we get it by hook and by crook. We've had some properties bequeathed to us. We've had some given to us. We've had, you know, various circuitous routes by which we've come into ownership of this land, and that's been great. Yes, this is very different. We have no formal standing here to make any decisions about this property. It is mostly owned. I've forgotten if there are seven or eight different parcels. The ownership is complicated. The title study was very extensive and somewhat complex. But most of the parcels are either owned, they're, I think, two owned by the county, several owned by the city, several listed as owned by the city IDA, which is a city agency. And then, as you say, there is this one parcel that started off being owned by the IDA, but by the time our study was done, it was in private ownership. So, you know, it's that's complicated. And basically the city and the county are going to have to decide whether they want to go forward with this, and if so, how they will organize it, whether one of them will take the lead, whether they'll do it collectively, whether they'll, you know, combine to create some third entity. And that's a conversation that's really just kind of getting underway. The city and the county have been generally supportive of this. They knew certainly we were doing the study. We've had preliminary conversations, but we haven't gotten too far down the road in terms of actually planning, well, now who is going to do what, and is this going to happen? Is this going to be a decision to go forward? And if so, how are we going to do it? So we're really kind of, we're a highly interested third party here, hoping that this will happen and wanting to do what we can to help.
Does it change the way the sorts of regulations and restrictions you can put? I mean, when you talk about conservation, you're talking about restricting the kinds of development that can occur in an area that may have fragile wildlife or habitat in it. So I'm wondering if the fact that you don't own the land restricts the kind of regulations you can put on the land in the future as far as future development comes along, or is that something you'll partner with the city on?
That's kind of a detail that we'd be talking about at some point in the future. But, you know, I think what you're alluding to, you know, CLC does a lot of different things. One of the basic things that we do is we hold conservation easements on privately owned land, and we have 22,000 acres of land like that. That's privately owned land owned by a person, you know, like you or me, that's decided to conserve the property and give up the development rights. And that's a whole kind of different aspect of the program. The conservation areas that we operate, some of them have easements on them held by another organization, but a lot of them don't. I mean, we I guess, have the hubris to think that if we own a piece of land, we're going to conserve it. And, you know, we make the management decisions. We decide whether any building gets built, and if so, where it goes, and that kind of thing. In this case, there's also very, very serious constraints about development. You know, you can't build things in a wetland, and you can't build things on a landfill very much. And there is some property here where you could put a structure. But, I mean, one of the things that's so interesting about this property is that there's this big wetland. There's really beautiful forests. There's steep ravines with streams in them. I mean, there's all kinds of different kind of habitats and ecosystems really within a 10-minute, somewhat strenuous hike of each other. And so there's a lot of different stuff there and a lot of topography. And I don't really think, except possibly for some of the land around the southern part of the bay, where there has been some industry, there aren't too many places you could really do a lot of building here.
And I know the CLC has been involved in preserving the biological diversity of this area because it was some months ago that the CLC raised concerns over mowing grass over the landfill area. Mm-hmm. So what was that in regards to? I was curious.
Well, you know, we that's a real interesting question about how you manage a hayfield in a way that's consistent with the grassland bird habitat. It's kind of a basic conflict of interests. Grassland birds are losing habitat because there's a decreasing amount of large grassland spaces, and much of what's left are active hayfields. And in today's world of farming, unlike 100 years ago, where farmers took one piece of hay, one cutting, and that was about all they could do with their horse and their scythe, they take four cuttings now, and they start early on, and basically it's not good for the birds. It birds that nest in the grass get killed when that happens. So we have done a lot of thinking about that because we have one site in particular, which is an active hayfield and also is a conservation area, and we're trying to manage it for both. And we've worked out a kind of a system there with the farmer that I think works. It's a compromise. It's not the best for either of us, but it works. But the best thing to do if you're not taking hay is to wait to mow until later in the year. So we were talking about this spring because it comes up in other contexts, and we were saying, you know, gee, wouldn't it be nice if we just let the grass grow at North Bay now? One of our recommendations is to manage the capped area as grassland bird habitat. And really, there's no reason we couldn't just start doing that by letting the grass grow and mow it once in the fall. So we got in touch with the Department of Public Works and the engineering firm and talked to them about it and said, have you ever thought about just saving some money and mowing it later? And they thought about it, thought it was a fine idea. They're willing to give it a try. So they hadn't gotten out at that point yet to mow, so the grass is growing higher there, and hopefully the birds are happy. I think they are. I've seen quite a few birds there. In the last, I was there about a month ago, and there were a lot of birds. And another good thing about that is it keeps people off a lot of the landfill. The landfill has taken a little bit of rough usage because there are people that go up there. There's even tire tracks on the landfill in some places, and arguably not a good thing. The cap isn't all that thick.
That's a concern because the cap itself is only about 2 feet.
Yeah, the cap is only about 2 feet. It's actually thick. 6 inches of clay on top of a polyethylene layer and then 2 feet of clay below that. You can actually see the poly in some places. It's actually been exposed. So that's it's a delicate thing. I would like to see personally, and people on my staff might disagree with this, I think it would be nice to have a trail that went. But the actual recommendation of the report is for the trail to sort of circumvent the landfill itself and go around it from the bottom and around it from the top. And if we can make that happen, that would be that'd be just fine as well. But it's awfully nice up there. I think you just have to do it in a way that you try to design it so you're really minimizing the impact. And one of the nice things about letting the grass grow is it controls the amount of human access that can be there.
I know there have been other solutions to some of the pollution issues down there and the industrial issues down there that don't seem completely comprehensive or thorough. The refrigerator factory down there just seems to have been fenced off. I don't know whether there's been any remediation of the old Foster's refrigeration factory. Do you know whether they've done any thorough remediation there?
I'm not sure that I know anything about it. It's my understanding that there has been some remediation, but there is remediation left to be done. And I believe the reason it's been fenced off is that, you know, it's going to cost quite a bit of money, and the funding hasn't been figured out yet. So in the meantime, it's being fenced off. I don't think, and I'm really not, you know, I mean, I hesitate to say anything about it because I really don't know. I've heard some talk about it, but I just by way of I don't think there's no one saying there's any danger there to human health or anything. I think whatever is there, the nature of the contamination, if I'm not mistaken, is it's kind of inert. It doesn't go anywhere. It's not like it's leaching into anything. It's the kind of chemical contaminant that stays in a place for a long time. So I don't think it's doing any harm while the city and whoever is trying to get the money together to do what needs to be done. I do think there's more work left to be done there.
And actually, yeah, while we're talking about funding, and I was curious to know what the timeline is on this project. I mean, is there a timeline? And maybe you can talk a little bit about the grand picture. I know I heard rumors, I don't know whether they're true, that the idea ultimately was to have a contiguous pathway all the way from Greenport all the way up to Troy. I don't know whether that's feasible or possible or just a grand vision right now. But so I was wondering if maybe you could talk a little bit about the timeline and the hope of when this project might materialize. Or,
well, the timeline is certainly, you know, it's uncertain. The decision-making entities here are the city and the county. The city and the county are, you know, they got their hands full. They got a lot of things to deal with, and it's a question of, it is my impression that the people in positions of authority there agree this is a good idea, would like to see it happen. You know, their resources to deal with it are limited, and I honestly don't know. I mean, we're trying to get the parties together to begin to talk about implementation and next steps, which would involve probably some further study, and we'd like to see some sort of initial, almost informal opening so that we could at least begin to get people there and get people excited about what a cool place it is, even though it would be a very, very partial reflection of the ultimate big picture that's reflected in this study. But I really don't know how long it's going to take. I'd like to think that we'd start doing some more studies this winter and through next year. These things take a while. I'm reluctant to say anything more about the timing other than that we're very eager to see it happen and trying to do what we can to make that happen. In terms of the big vision, yeah, there is this 700-acre preserve, Greenport. Scenic Hudson actually owns a place called Harrier Hill that they opened up a couple of years ago, just a mile and a half or so north of Greenport. We actually manage that place for them. And just last week, work was completed on a trail connecting Greenport and Harrier Hill. So you can now walk from Greenport up to Harrier Hill. That's in Stockport. There is a old trolley line that used to connect Hudson to Albany in the 19th century, which is now a power line, a right-of-way, and for goodness sakes, I'm going blank. It's not NYSEG, it's the other power company. But it's an active right-of-way that goes all the way from Stockport up through Kinderhook and into Rensselaer County. And there is a very active group of people in Kinderhook, Stockport, and Stuyvesant working on turning that into a trail. We're working with them. Ellen has been quite active working with them. They've gotten some grants. A little piece of it, I think, is scheduled to open around the Martin Van Buren place. So ultimately, it's very conceivable that there would be a trail going from Hudson into Rensselaer County, basically on this power line right-of-way.
And if people took your rail trail from Wassaic up to Chatham, yeah, they could conceivably...
You could make a connection. You'd have to do a little bit of biking some roads. Yeah, there's the Harlan Valley Rail Trail, which is the next 5 miles of that is under active planning. Hopefully... that study is going to be done this fall, and that would bring it all the way from Copic Falls into the hamlet of Hillsdale. That would get it across Route 22, which is a big deal, and up kind of making a left turn. So instead of going north, it's going west across by Route 23. Yeah, there's. We did a conference last spring at the college, a day-long conference to sort of envision a trail system in the county. And got out maps, had a lot of people. I think there were over 100 people there. There's several abandoned rail beds in the county besides the Harlan Valley Rail Trail and this power right-of-way that I mentioned. I'm still going blank on this. Ridiculous. I know the name of the company. You know it, too. But there are several others. And there's really enormous potential for a really exciting network of trails in the county, which would be great from our point of view.
And so if people want to... access the plan and take a look at some of the ideas that the Columbia Land Conservancy has for this area, where can they go to learn more about it?
Well, we have a copy of the plan is available on our website, which is clctrust.org. We have a few hard copies left. We might actually have to print up a few more. We made quite a few, but over the year they've gotten handed out to people. But it is quite accessible on the website. And I think it's pretty easy to read. There's a lot of pretty pictures. And I hope it will be inspiring to people. We've gotten a lot of good feedback about it.
All right. Well, Peter Payton, thank you so much for coming on the Monday afternoon show to talk about the North Bay and coming out in this weather.
Well, it's been great. Thanks so much for asking me to be on the show.
All right.